Welcome to Faith on the Line with Amazing Discoveries. Today we continue our series on music, media, and the mind with a guest speaker from South Africa. Brian Newman shows how music plays such a big role in our lives and explains to us how music is not just neutral, as many have been led to believe, including myself at one time. Today we will take a look at some common misconceptions about the language of music from a speaker who for 16 years was a professional rock musician. Here's Brian Newman.
Well, welcome to number 4 in our series, Voices of a Dying Planet. So far, we have looked at the body temple principle, and we have seen that things affect us either positively or negatively as we take them in through the body temple. We looked at the media and how the media actually control us. We also looked at the language of music and the powerful effect which it has on us, and how we can actually change our decision-making process, our emotional state, through those atmospheres and sounds that we hear in the language, through the language of music, or create through the language of music, rather, should I say. I also said that today we are going to look at some of the misconceptions that people have regarding the language of music and how we relate to it. I'd like to start off, actually, by referring you to some thoughts that great historians have actually told us about, have recorded, about some of the greatest nations and how they have shown us that how music played such a vital role in setting the stage for the downfall of many of the greatest nations because of a negative type of atmosphere that was created through the language of music that was being used. In fact, Plato, the philosopher and historian, speaking about the Greeks, he said that it was, and I quote, "through foolishness that they deceived themselves into thinking that there was no right or wrong in music, and that it was to be judged, good or bad, by the pleasure that it gave." Think about that for a while. They thought on a basic level that music was neutral. And it is either good or bad, just depending on the kind of pleasure which it evokes within you. If it feels good, in other words, it's fine. But we know already from clear study into human nature and into how certain things affect the human organism that not everything that makes you feel good is necessarily good for you. Not everything that may stimulate you is good for you. For example, some people take certain kinds of drugs. It might make them feel good, but the ultimate end result is destructive to the human organism, to the body temple. But the Greeks, regarding the language of music, the same fallacy that is pervasive in society today, think that music is thought that music was neutral, and that it was good or bad just depending on how it actually made you feel. We know this is not true. But why is it that we do respond to music in the way that we have already suggested that we do in our previous program, and of course as we are starting to we are suggesting once again in our present one? Well, why do we respond to music? Is it just a case of environment and culture and so on that will determine how you respond to it? I don't believe so. In fact, musicologists will tell us that much of what we call irresistible in music is so because we react on a sensory motor level of functioning. In fact, they tell us that music has such a powerful effect on you and I, far more powerful than we actually consciously realize. When we listen to music, it goes via the thalamus, which is a relay station for sensations, emotions, and feelings. And of course, that is why we know music is a language which stimulates emotions and of course expresses human emotion. It automatically invades the master brain, and there is a sensory or motor level of functioning that kicks in when the language of music comes via the thalamus and invades the master brain. I'll give you an example perhaps of how this works. You may be somewhere in a mall, not even consciously aware of the music that is being played in the background. You walk into a shop, you're looking at some products there in the shop. Before you know it, you find your foot tapping or your head nodding to the rhythm of some piece of music, and then suddenly the conscious mind clicks in and you say, you realize, ah, there is some music that is being played. And then of course you respond to the music, or at least now you are consciously aware of the fact that the music is there. Some people will still argue the point though, and they will say, well, that's fine and I accept that, but it is not necessarily the music that is influencing you, either positively or negatively, but it has to do with the words of the music, not the actual language or tone or atmosphere of the music itself, that determines whether it is positive or negative. Let me ask you a few questions to try and establish very clearly, and these questions are based on very solid scientific and medical research. We'll look into a lot more of that during forthcoming presentations. But the question is, if you wanted to create an atmosphere of romance, let's say you had an evening where you had everything laid out, the person that you really love is coming around for dinner, all the candlelight and the whole atmosphere is perfect, but now you want to choose the music for that romantic evening. What kind of music will you choose? Somebody may say, well, I will choose something that has a soul music. Somebody may say, I might choose Richard Clayderman. Somebody else may say, I might choose classical music. And maybe ask another question. Would you use military march band music for creating a romantic atmosphere? Of course, the response would invariably be, don't be ridiculous. Why on earth would I use military march band music? It just doesn't have the right kind of, and now listen very carefully, the right kind of atmosphere. Now, whether you are choosing soul, whether you are choosing classical music or Richard Clayderman or any other kind of music, and it may be that your taste is not classical, so you would choose soul, but there is a basic principle inherent in the music itself that will suggest to you, and it doesn't matter which of these styles you use, will suggest to you that this is the appropriate music for romantic atmosphere. It has got nothing to do with the words. If it had to do with the words, in other words, soul or the classics or Clayderman, although they are different styles of music, come from different eras in musical history, one contemporary, one ancient, and so on. The basic atmosphere, emotional suggestiveness in the music is the same. In other words, the concept of that which is softer would be prevalent in the music as opposed to that which is harsh and hard-hitting, as one would find in some other forms of music which you may use for other kinds of atmospheres. And maybe to make the point clearly, and it's not dependent on the lyrics, it's dependent on the atmosphere of the music itself. For example, let's say the music was neutral, then surely military march band music would be perfectly acceptable as long as you had words or lyrics that spoke about romance and love, relationship between a man and a woman. But we all would say, don't be ridiculous. It still wouldn't be right because it's that military march band atmosphere. You see, you get the point. The point is here is that it is, the, and we know this on a very basic level, all human beings know this, that it's got nothing to do with the words. The words are there, yes. They must complement the music, or the music must complement the words, whichever way you want to look at it. But that which creates the tone or the atmosphere is determined by the music itself. And maybe understanding some principles of human emotion will be very important, and I've alluded to some of these things a little bit earlier on. Some of the significant emotions which we experience as human beings, for example, might be anger. The other one might be sex. Sorrow and grief might be another one. Reverence and respect might be another one, and joy. All these are different kinds of emotions which we experience as human beings and can be conveyed through the language of music as it expresses those emotions. But it is often the case today that sexuality and anger are the two things which are being conveyed through the music, and of course indeed through the media as well. Scientists are telling us that because of our overexposure to these emotions, not that they are bad, but an overemphasis in this area is making us less sensitive to some of the other emotions, the more sensitive emotions, maybe like sorrow, reverence and grief and joy and so on. Because we are overemphasizing, and the brain, in other words, we are becoming desensitized. The brain is becoming numbed. And ultimately that results in us needing stronger and stronger stimulation all the time. Very, very important. That's why you will see that in the past 50 or so years, in the past 5 decades, we have seen a gradual increase in more and more stimulating kinds of expressions through the media and through the media music which we are listening to. A neuroscientist, Thomas Albert, speaking about music, he says, Thomas Albert, neuroscientist at the University of Konstanz in Germany, found the connection between musical ability and the brain's language center to be especially intriguing. He noticed that the same part of the brain, the center which deals with language, the spoken language, is the same part of the brain that deals with our interpretation of music, of dealing with music. Of course, I bring the statement to your attention because we are going to use some examples in the spoken language to very clearly illustrate the fallacies, or rather expose the fallacies that people have today with regards to the language of music. And let me do it in the form of some questions. Okay. First of all, we're going to look at the whole aspect of words as opposed to atmosphere, to concretely show that it is not the words that are the most important. If a baby, for example, of 3 months old was about to reach out and grab something that it was not supposed to touch, and the mother said to the baby, "No," what does the baby understand first? Does the baby understand the spoken language, in other words, whether it be English or German or Spanish or French that the mother is speaking, or does the baby understand the tone of the mother's voice first? Of course, it's obvious. The child understands the tone of voice first, which immediately suggests that it is the tone which is more important than the actual word, spoken word itself. And for different kinds of situations, you may use a different expression of no. If a child was about to run in front of a truck, the mother might shout, "No," to prevent the child from running. And no matter what culture you went to, the mother, if you went to the heart of Africa, a different culture completely to Western culture, if a child ran in front of a truck, the mother would shout no in exactly the same tone of voice, because that is the emotion which she is conveying. That's what she feels, and that's what she wants to convey to the child, to cause it to respond in the desired way, and mothers would be the same all over the world. And we'll talk a little bit more about the cultural aspect. But recognize, first of all, it is the tone of voice. What about that romantic evening? Let's go back to a romantic evening once again. You've got that candlelight, you've got the right music, of course, this timing, everything's perfect. The person that you love comes around to your house, and this is going to be the first time that you are going to say to that person you love them. And the moment arrives at the time of that evening where you say to the person, and this is how you say it, you say, "I love you," in that kind of tone of voice. Notice something, you'd say, "Well, I don't think that I would say I love you in that kind of tone of voice." Of course you wouldn't. Now let's assume the person walked out the door and you ran after them and said, "Don't be ridiculous, please don't leave. Don't you understand that I'm saying I love you? It's not the tone of my voice that is most important, it is the fact that I'm saying I love you." Of course they're going to think you're more crazy than what they thought in the first place. You see how ridiculous the concept is, because people want to apply that same principle to music. They say it's not important how the music sounds, it is important what you say in the music. It doesn't work. It's not true. The language of music itself expresses the tone, and the words, if you are expressing something, should be compatible with the tone. There are many people today, for example, who will think that you can sing about Jesus and his love and those sensitive types of things, and expressing those emotions which are connected to the nature of Christ and to biblical concepts which are pure, elevating, and noble, while the music, the atmosphere of the music, is sending out a contradictory message. Can you understand now what we are trying to say? And of course, this is in all different parts, areas of our human experience. Some may say, "Well, yeah, okay, but what about the cultural thing? What about culture?" I mean, for example, in Africa, and you could use India, you could use any other part of the world as an example. In Africa, for example, their music, the way in which they respond to music would be totally different. Most Westerners, for example, when they think about African music, they picture some people in the middle of the night with a full moon dancing around a big bonfire while they are banging on big drums, and they think, well, that's African music. But Having come from Africa myself, I know that that is not only what African music is. In fact, there are many different kinds of musical expressions in Africa as there are in Western society. Now, it may be that the music has specifically African qualities to the melody and the harmony structures. In other words, there is a flavor, African flavor in the music. But in Africa, they will have a different music. A shepherd, for example, who was looking after his sheep out there in the pasture, who might write a song about his sheep and about being a shepherd, will create a certain kind of music which is different from the traditional picture that Westerners have of African music. A mother, for example, who is singing a song to her child before the child goes to sleep, will use a different tone of music. And maybe I could pose a question by asking, what kind of music would a mother in Africa use to put a child to sleep? Would she bring out the big African drums and start banging on them so the child would go to sleep? Well, of course, you would say that is absolutely ridiculous. And indeed it is. In fact, in Africa, the mother might sing a very soft, gentle African lullaby so that the child will go to sleep. Yet, the song will have a particular African flavor, as we have already suggested, which makes it very clear that how we listen to music is not entirely determined by the culture that you come from. It may be, for example, that the mother in Africa has that African flavor in the music with regards to the melody and the harmony and so on, but the basic understanding in all cultures of loud and soft is the same. The same as we have different atmospheres in Western society, in our expressions of music for different kinds of occasions, the same in Africa. One example would be that in Africa, when they have music that specifically is music used for dancing, as we have already tried to paint the little picture of the drums and the bonfire in the middle of the night, they will use music that emphasizes the beat or the rhythm. You can go to clubs, discotheques, raves, anywhere in Western society, they use exactly the same musical principles that are being emphasized for dancing. So we are not really that different with regards to how we relate to atmospheres of music. Maybe one could use the example of a movie producer. Let's assume that a movie producer in Hollywood wants to make a movie, and he calls in the person who is going to do the soundtrack, the music for the movie, and he says, I want you to realize that this movie is going to be released in a whole lot of different countries around the world, India and China and Japan and South America, Australia and Africa, wherever. And I want you to write a different music soundtrack for the atmosphere in the different scenes of the movie and the theme song and so on for every single country that we are releasing the movie in, because they're different cultures and they are not going to respond to the music in the same way if we are just going to use music which is we might think is appropriate for Western society or Western culture. Of course, you are saying, well, that's ridiculous. The movie producer doesn't do that. Of course he doesn't do that, because the movie producer understands that no matter where in the world he releases that movie, even though traditionally that culture or people may not always listen to the same music that you may listen to in Western society, they will still respond on the emotional level to the different scenes and the atmospheres in the movie the same way as anybody else in any other society in the world does. So there again is a very important proof that we respond very similarly to the language of music. And yes, just for a final one, a very interesting example. Researchers have looked at the way in which cultures respond to music, and they discovered that there is a certain melody, three notes, G, E, A, and then the repetition of the first two, G, E, that are used in different cultures and societies by children when they are growing up to tease one another with. A little melody. You all know the little melody. In fact, I often do these presentations in different countries around the world, and I always get the same reply when it comes to this little melody. And the melody goes something like this. Na, 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 na. You've heard that before? Well, they've discovered that you can go down to the Aborigines in Australia, you can go to South America, you can go to Africa, and all children use this melody. Another indication that there is something, that there are many, not just few things, but everything with regards to our emotional makeup as human beings are almost identical, and the way in which we respond on those different levels. And that is why, when we are exposed to different atmospheres in music, we respond in the same way. Yes, emphasize this again, culture plays a role, but it does not play such a significant role as people have tried to suggest. Even though we may have our cultural flavor in our music, and different way in which we emphasize and utilize harmony and melody, we will still react on a basic level to the basic tones and atmospheres in music everywhere around the world, regardless of culture. When we continue in our seminar next time, we're going to look at the certain elements, the categories in music, and three specific categories in music: melody, harmony, and rhythm, and how we respond on different levels, physical and mental, on different levels to these three categories in music. And again, we will see that we respond in the same way, irrespective of culture or whatever group you may belong to, irrespective of your upbringing and so on. So thank you very much for your time. We look forward to getting together in our next presentation as we look at these very, very important issues surrounding the language of music and how we respond to it. Goodbye.
As we begin to see how music really is a language of its own, it begins to make sense that the atmosphere and the lyrics in the music should be in harmony with one another. It is a great misconception when people say that it's just the words that matter in a song, because if the atmosphere of that song is contradicting the words, you really have a song that doesn't know which way it's going. Brian will be with us tomorrow to share more on this important topic. If you'd like an audio cassette of this message for $5 US, call Amazing Discoveries toll free at 1-866-572-9457. That's 866-572-9457. We have two resources that we would like to share with you on this important but often overlooked topic on music. Brian Newman has written a book entitled From Rock and Roll to Rock of Ages, which is a personal testimony of where he has been and how God changed his life. The book also shares practical insight into the issues of music and how a person can choose music that is pleasing to our Lord and Savior. The book is $11 US and can be purchased over the phone with a major credit card by calling 866-572-9457. The other resource we'd like to let you know about is his 7 videotape series on music, where he presents this information in a multimedia format. The video series can be purchased for $91 US plus shipping and handling. The number once again is 866-572-9457. If you have more questions, please visit our website at www.amazingdiscoveries.org, where you can watch a video clip of Brian in one of his seminars and can order online through our secure website. That's www.amazingdiscoveries.org. Please send your letters to Amazing Discoveries, Box 26012, Richmond, BC, V6Y3V3. And in the US, write to Box 4480, Blaine, Washington, 98231. We'd like to leave you with one of Brian Newman's latest songs from his Abide With Me CD, also available through Amazing Discoveries. The song is entitled In the Sweet By and By. I'm Jason Hernberg. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow as Brian continues these amazing discoveries.
Sweet. think of that beautiful shore, the melodious songs of the blessed, and our spirit shall sorrow no more. Not a sigh for the blessing of rest in the sweet by and by. We shall meet on that beautiful shore in the sweet by and by.
Just been listening to Brian Newman with a song entitled In the Sweet By and By. Brian Newman is touring the US and Canada this fall, sharing his research and insights on music in a number of churches across the country. If you have enjoyed his presentations on the radio, we would greatly appreciate your kind donations to help finance the music series Voices of a Dying Planet, being brought to North America in November. Brian's series have been a blessing to many in the past, and we thank you for being a part of bringing that blessing to others with your donations. Your tax-deductible donations can be sent to Amazing Discoveries, Box 26012, Richmond, BC, V6Y3V3, or call us at 1-866-572-9457. Again, your donations are tax deductible, and you can even call us with a Visa or MasterCard number for quick processing of your donation. Brian's message is a vital one and needs to go out to all churches around the country. If you are interested in booking Brian Newman for a music series in your church, please call the office at 1-866-572-9457.